did here, I'm not going to stand these pants in a corner. We're going to have to wash them now because I spilled a big goober all over it. I usually just throw them in a corner and they stand there for the next week. Saves on washing. Okay, Daniel 2, verse 49, the last phrase, and then go into Daniel 3. And let's go ahead and pray. Lord, I do ask you to help us to understand your words. Help us to see that history amazingly repeats itself over and over and over. And Lord, I pray you'd help us to be people that learn from history and to do what we can not to repeat the same foolish mistakes that people make in the past. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay, Daniel 2:49, the last phrase. This seems to tell us where Daniel was in Daniel chapter 3. Now, of course, we don't know the time period between 2 and 3, but still, the idea that became his official place. Okay, so at the end of Daniel 2, but Daniel sat in the gate of the king. Okay, so this is called, and I'll show you several other places. This is the political position that Daniel officially sat in or became a part of. So in Daniel 3, when the king is up there presenting his great image, Daniel's standing behind him. You ever see that? Politicians always got people standing behind them. I don't understand. I don't get that. Okay, but they always got to do that. Okay, but Daniel's behind him, and evidently he's not allowed to say anything. I would say if he did, he'd probably get his head cut off or whatnot. Okay, so in the gate, that's a phrase you want to understand as far as the Bible goes. That is the business and political places for official business, politically and economically. Okay, in the gate. Let's try one, Genesis chapter 19. Okay, now in our culture, generally speaking, where is the political, official documents held and or land documents held? Okay, it's in the courthouse. Okay, that's our culture. In the Bible, it's in the gate is a position of political authority and or a business adventures. Genesis 19, and there came two angels to Sodom at even, and Lot sat in the gate of Sodom. And Lot seeing them rose up and so forth and so on. Okay, now as being in the gate, notice the accusation that the Sodomites said to Lot is in verse 9. They said, stand back, and they said again, this one fellow came in to sojourn, and he will needs be a judge. So Lot was a type of a judge in Sodom. Okay, was it an elected position or appointed position? But can you imagine anybody in San Francisco going up to be a judge and their political stand is Christianity, the King James Bible, straight, more straight, being straight? You're not going to get elected in San Francisco if that is known. You have to be a compromiser or hide a lot of your beliefs. Now, Mr. Lot, the last thing we read about him, that he was a social drinker, going to all the political parties, and this is where they blackmail a lot of senators and congressmen through the political drunken parties. Okay, and a lot of evil goes on there. Okay, and so evidently Lot was used to that because his own two daughters got him drunk, and that's the last thing we find about Mr. Lot. Okay, and in the New Testament said he's a righteous man. Okay, let's try a couple other places. Ruth chapter 4. Okay, you know the story of Ruth and Boaz. And Boaz is wanting to marry Ruth, but there was a kinsman that was closer to him. And so he approached the kinsman as the kinsman was walking by in the gate, and then they made this an official type of a marriage. Okay, not a marriage license per se. There's a deceptive means for that in our culture, but still it's in the public arena. Chapter 4 of Ruth. Then went Boaz up to the gate and sat down there, and behold, the kinsman of whom Boaz spake came by, and whom he said, "Ho, such a one, turn aside, sit down here." And he turned aside and sat down, and then they made an official agreement in the gate. Okay, Proverbs chapter 22. Proverbs 22. Verse 22. The political figureheads don't like it when you street preach around the courthouse. Okay, even though it's public territory, and so when a judge comes out, you can preach all you want at him, and he can't hold you in contempt of court. So it's a good place to do some preaching outside the courthouse. The judge that I was in front of, he goes right by me, and I got the sign out there. Proverbs 22, verse 22, "Rob not the poor because he is poor, neither oppress the afflicted in the gate. For the Lord will plead their cause, court case, and spoil the soul of those that spoiled them." That's dealing with the political figureheads, judges, okay, where they're using their position to get money from people who cannot defend themselves. This is how most traffic tickets occur. Is they want to make it high enough to make it worthy of the charge, but want to make it low enough so that people don't take off work to fight it. And so usually they just throw in the cash and give it up. Okay, even though all traffic regulations are, if you read Title IX, are only the obligation of state-owned vehicles. That's what Title IX says. Okay, but that's a whole different issue. Okay, so, but the idea is when I'm showing you is that he's in the gate. Esther chapter 3 verse 2 is the one I write there in the margins. And there's probably a bunch more there. King's Gate. Okay, so there's enough that it didn't even have in the margins that you could write on the side. Esther 3 verse 2, "And all the king's servants that were in the king's gate bowed," and so forth. Okay, so That's our idea. I don't know why. I've heard this many times that people who teach the Bible, Bible teachers, when they get talking about Daniel, they don't want, for some reason, they say that Daniel was an ambassador and he was off someplace else during this event. I don't know where they come up with the idea. Maybe they're just trying to think good of Daniel. Okay, but this is an amazing thing. Okay, you have Daniel, such a good man, a man that God gave secrets about Nebuchadnezzar, but yet can he say something here? I doubt it. I doubt he can say it. Let me give you another place. If you would look at Revelation 2, sometimes things are just not as you can try to figure out. Revelation 2, this is one on Pergamos. I went through this one on the radio. I did 4 radio broadcasts, and I went through this one on Pergamos. Pergamos is a bad church of the 7. It's rebuked quite a bit, quite heavily. But in the middle of this bad situation, there's a good man. Okay, Revelation 2, verse 12, you can see Pergamos. The name means much married. So it's like the church and the world are married together. Somebody's trying to straddle the fence. Verse 13, "I know thy works," okay, that's okay, "and where thou dwellest," that's okay, "even where Satan's seat is," that's not okay. That's in a church. And "thou holdest fast my name." How could somebody hold fast his name in right there by Satan's seat? "And hast not denied my faith." That sounds pretty good, those two phrases. "Even in those days wherein Antipas, my faithful martyr." So here's a man in the middle of all this, and he's faithful to the Lord, and he dies a martyr. "Who is slain among you where Satan dwelleth." That's a bad thing. You got good and bad all right here intermingled. Verse 14, but I have a few things against thee, because thou hast there them that hold the doctrine of Balaam. That's bad. Who taught Balak to cast a stumbling block before the children of Israel. To eat things sacrificed unto idols. That's bad. To commit fornication. That's bad. So hast thou also them that hold the doctrine of the Nicolaitans, which thing I hate. That's bad. And then he says, repent, or else I will come unto thee quickly and will fight against them that with the sword of my mouth. So here you have in this church, good and bad intermingled. It's like the Lord said in Matthew 13, let the tares grow up with the wheat. They're growing up together. Okay, and it might surprise you that there are some people that go to NIV churches that do love the Lord. They do. Just because they may or may not have known that issue, maybe they've rejected the issue. Okay, or RSV, or I've met some Catholic people that have a good profession of faith. Okay, and so it's really strange how this thing goes in and out, where you have the Apostle Peter speaking by the inspiration of God, and 1 minute and 5 minutes later by the inspiration of the devil. And so the Lord is looking at our hearts. Okay, so if a person is going to judge Daniel for allowing a wicked thing taking place in Daniel chapter 3, then we better look in the mirror ourselves, putting ourselves in that position. Okay, what would you do? I have no idea what I'd do. Would I run out there and stand beside Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? I'd probably not. I'd probably sit there saying, good for you, good for you. Okay, but they got to earn their own spurs, I guess you could say. And that's Daniel 3. So now we get into Daniel 3, this image. Nebuchadnezzar the king made an image of gold. Okay, now it just says an image. It doesn't say, is it his likeness? It just says an image. Whose height was 70 cubits. And the breadth thereof 6 cubits. Now, isn't that kind of funny? 70, that's 60. And then the 6 says 66. You got 6 associated with this. And then you're going to have 6 Babylonian instruments that are named. And it's going to be set up. It's going to be set up. The thing's set up. Okay, so 70 cubits. So if a cubit's a foot and a half, let's make it that. That's 90 feet tall. Okay, and then 6 cubits in breadth. So 9 feet. That's very thin, very tall. And at the top, probably a pyramid. Okay, this would be called an obelisk or Washington Monument. Now, years ago, a man wrote a book called Two Babylons. This is written in the 1800s. When you read it, you'll probably have to scratch your head a couple times to try to figure out what he's saying. Then you read it a second time, you begin to understand, because those people had much more intellect than what we do now. So Mr. Hislop wrote about Two Babylons, and he shows that the Babylonian religion, and this is Babylon, came through Egypt into Rome. And he writes about some of the history of that. I think he grew up in the Catholic faith, and so he had a little understanding of that. Then there's a fellow named Ralph Woodrow that wrote a simplified version of this. Okay? About to say, anybody ever read this one? Ralph Woodrow would be what we'd call an evangelical, okay, non-denominational type. He has since, I don't know, changed some of his beliefs. So if you want to find this book online, it's going to be about 30 or 40 books, because it's kind of out of print. Okay, mine's kind of falling apart. So he's gotten a different book called The Babylonian Connection. So I don't know if he watered it down or whatever. Okay, and he has in here some of the mother-child worship, and he has here obelisk, temples, and towers. And then you can see Washington Monument. Okay, you go to any cemetery, you find a Washington Monument. Okay, you go down to Rensselaer Post Office. Right in front, the two boxes, the post boxes right between it, Washington Monument. Right there. Okay, and so that's usually promoted by Masons. Okay, and that's most likely what Nebuchadnezzar had put up here, a Washington Monument. There used to be one down in Egypt. And I think it's written in this one, where a pope wanted it from Egypt to the Vatican City. So it's transferring from Babylon to Egypt to the Vatican City. And so if you're going to take a great big tower and try to take it down and transport it from Egypt across the ocean to the Vatican City, you better know what you're doing. And you really better know what you're doing, because the Pope said that whoever does this, if they break it, if it falls, he gets the death sentence. So I'm sure the guy's wife said, you make sure you get some life insurance. Okay, or at least he had an escape plan how to get out of there if it happened. Well, some guy did it. So if you go to St. Peter's Basilica, there it is, right in the middle, when the Pope speaks to all these catholics, and then all of a sudden they're going to be standing right around this pagan symbol. And we'll just leave it at that. I think the adults know what kind of a symbol it is. So Nebuchadnezzar is going to do that. Okay, and it says 60 cubits and a breadth thereof 6 cubits. He set it up, set it up, set up. That set is up several times. It might be six. You have to count it. Or set up might be six times. In the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. So this is a Babylonian religion. The Nebuchadnezzar, the king, sent to gather together the princes, the governors, the captains, the judges, the treasurers, counselors, the sheriffs, and all the rulers of the provinces. Daniel's in that gang to come to the dedication of the image which Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. Okay, then the princes and the governors and the captains and the judges and the treasurers and the counselors and the sheriffs and all the rulers of the provinces were gathered together unto the dedication of the image that Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up, and they stood before the image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Keep going. I don't know if anybody's counting them. I don't remember how many. I think it's six. It might be. I don't know. Okay, so this is a dedication of an event. It's a big deal. No doubt Daniel was there. Okay, and so this is, you know, anybody knows that this takes place when you get a building done, they dedicate it or whatnot, or a ship, you know, they bust a bottle on it or something. So this is a big deal. Everybody's there. And remember that Nebuchadnezzar is the king of kings, the first international king. And he's taken possibly the image that he saw, and then he make the whole thing gold, and it's out for himself. Okay, now notice it says the king made an image of gold. It didn't say over covered with gold. It is gold. Okay, according to that. Then he says, then an herald cried aloud. Okay, so you got a guy with a booming voice to the side, and he yells out, to you it is commanded, O people, nations, and languages, that at what time ye hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, and dulcimer, and all kinds of music. So we got six instruments named, and notice how music is spelled, okay, with sick at the end. And the reason why is this music that they're going to play will make people sick physically, mentally, emotionally. Okay, our military has developed enough skill that they know certain sounds or certain musics can make people turn into big babies and walk out like Noriega did, as a bumbling fool, as he walks out of his place down wherever he's at, Nicaragua, I forget. And then arrested him and put him in jail. And they did that by music. Or they did it by music during Waco, where they played this music and little rabbits screeching all night long to keep the people in Waco, the 26 little children, they kept them awake all night long. And then Janet or John Reno or whatever it was gassed those 26 children. Okay, and of course that's just all been whitewashed, hasn't it? People have forgotten about Waco. Forget the Alamo. Don't forget Waco. Okay, that's in modern history. That was Bill Clinton administration. Okay, and so all this stuff that's going on, it's just behind the scenes, it's so wicked. Okay, but they're playing this music, and this music will be mesmerizing. It will be hypnotic. Okay, so bad music in the Bible will definitely make a person sick, mentally, physically, emotionally, and definitely spiritually. So when they hear this music, they are told to fall down and worship the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king has set up. So this will be the technique the Antichrist will get people to worship his image through African music. Okay, that's the technique. That's what the churches all across America are pushing, contemporary Christian music. It's African music from the top to the bottom. Every bit of it's African. The beat is African. The music is African. Okay, and this is why they're starting to look like Africans. This is why the church is in a mess. Okay, and some of them, like down in Wheatfield, between DeMott and Wheatfield, they'll put 666 out front in a nice little three circles. An esoteric 666. How many people know that go into the first church? Nobody's knowing that. Okay, and so this is how Americans are getting used to the African ways. The African music, they got African Bibles, and now they got African morals. Or lack thereof. So, okay, verse 6. But whoso falleth not down and worship shall the same hour be cast in a burning fiery furnace. Okay, the only difference between that and the tribulation, they get their head cut off. This one, they're thrown in some type of an outdoor, a place where they throw in the heat and they torch and throw people in. Probably small children for their sacrifices for political power, like Molech, is what Molech would do. So obviously, verse 6, who's gonna defy that order? 7, therefore at the time when all the people heard the sound of the Babylonian brass band, we'll call it that, all the people, the nations, and the languages fell down and worshiped the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. Wherefore, at the time, certain Chaldeans came near and accused the Jews. Okay, of the, how many thousand Jewish people were brought to Babylon? According to Jeremiah 52, 4,600. 4,600 Jewish royalty and middle class people were taken from Jerusalem to Babylon. 4,600, we know the names of 5 of them: Ezekiel, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. 4,600, Ezekiel, where he was it during this time, he might have been dead by that time. But over 4,000 Jewish people were bowing down and worshiping something that they know was fake. They know it was fake. Jen Ski was just telling me, she's watching this documentary, and they talked to this Jewish person, and this Jewish person talked about a world leader coming. And he said, the world leader, I forget, there are 3 characteristics, how she said, I'm going to have to ask her, but the world leader will be able to unite the world, 1. The world leader will not be God, 2. And the world leader will be, I think she said, he said, part Jewish. Now, is that not a description of the Antichrist? Now, that thing in their heart, he will not be God. They will not worship a person walking. When they discover that being is the devil, and he wants them to worship him, many of them are going to recognize this is the devil, and then will come to Jesus Christ. And so I think that's rather enlightening or encouraging. So you got some Chaldeans, they're ratting out the Jews. Okay, they're ratting them out. They're ratting out Jewish faithful people. Verse 9, Then they spake and said to the king Nebuchadnezzar, O king, live forever. Yeah, right. Thou, O king, hast made a decree that every man should hear the Babylonian brass band Okay, shall fall down and worship the golden image. Of course, I know that. I said that. Yeah. And whoso falleth not down and worshipeth, that he should be cast in the midst of a burning fiery furnace. Yeah. So what? Go on. There are certain Jews among whom thou hast set over the affairs of the province of Babylon. So they're tattletales. Little tattletales. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have not regarded thee. Well, that's a stretch. That's their opinion. Have not regarded thee, they serve not thy gods. Okay, that's true. Nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. Okay, that's true also. And then Nebuchadnezzar, in his rage and fury, commanded to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So, Nebuchadnezzar's mad. Outrageously mad. You ever see somebody where they can be real nice to you, polite, kind, and as soon as you mention Jesus Christ, their eyes light up, and they start getting mad? Or you're talking about something, and all of a sudden you hit a nerve, and they instantly get mad? That's why you don't talk about religion and politics. It's because most people's beliefs in those two areas are personal, emotional beliefs, and as soon as you hit the nerve, the unclean spirit inside of them spark that fuse and they get wild. Hey, if you know the truth, you don't have to get mad. There's no reason for it. No reason at all. Okay, when you know the truth of God, relax. The truth can stand alone. But if you're propping it up and you get mad, that tells me a couple things. Either you're not secure in your beliefs, or you're not solid enough in your beliefs. It says, some people say, well, I'm righteously indignant. Yeah, go tell somebody else that. Okay, James 1:20 says, the wrath of man worketh not the righteousness of God. And so the thing is if we got the truth, relax, enjoy it. And if somebody's trying to talk to you about some things, you know, start pointing out some flaws that you have in it and say, these are the problems I have in it. And if you say it in a very kind way, okay, but then there's sometimes people are just going to go in a fit of rage. Okay, liberals are like that. Extreme liberals. Boy, the old saying is a hit dog barks. And when they bark, you got them. Okay, and so Nebuchadnezzar's mad. He's upset. Why? He made the image. He ordered it made. It's all about me. Everything revolves around me. So you're affecting him. This is why scholars get so upset if you go against their belief system, is because their system was based on their opinion. Of course we know their opinion's godly. Everybody knows that. If you don't, ask them. I was talking to a New King Jimmy guy one time. It was after we had George Malcolmus. I'm thinking, how do we get talking about a King James Bible after George Malcolmus has been talking about health? Well, the guy's in the back of the church down in Rensselaer, and we're talking back and forth, and he's throwing out his, you know, thing and his thing and his thing. And so finally I said, okay, let me ask you a question. If you were a king in an island and you inspired laws, would you use your power to preserve those laws from error? He said, of course. I said, why do you think you're smarter than God? He said, what do you mean? I said, God inspired a book and he kept it without error. Now, you think it's very reasonable and logical that you would do it if you were a king in Ireland, but you don't think God did that. You think you're smarter than God. You think about, I know about you. I said, I am so appreciative of you because you're honest about your dishonesty. And that was about the end of the conversation. Because, yeah. If any of us, if we were kings on an island, we were presidents, and we had the power to inspire laws, we would use our power to preserve the laws, would we not? If we felt like we could perfect it a little bit better, we would do that. And that's what God has done. Thank God for that. Okay, but here, this guy got mad. Nebuchadnezzar got mad. Rage and fury. And he's going to murder somebody. And that's often the intent when people get out of control angry. Okay, verse 13. Then they brought these men before the king. And Nebuchadnezzar spake and said unto them, is it true, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? Now, I like that question. He wants to get firsthand information. Is it true? And then it's, do not ye serve my God? Yeah, that's right. And I think you knew that. nor worship the golden image which I have set up. Yeah, and I think you knew that too. Now, if ye be ready, that at what time ye hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, and dulcimer, and all kinds of music, ye fall down and worship the image which I have made, well. But if you worship not, ye shall be cast the same hour into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. And who is that God shall deliver you out of my hands? Okay, I notice he said worship. Now, you can't, a person is not going to convince me that those thousands of Babylonian people, when they fell down, they actually worshiped out of a pure heart or impure heart that image. No, they bowed down because they were afraid of going to the fire. Now, I did a study a little bit. I looked at that. If you go back and look at the mark of the beast, now most people will say that people take the mark of the beast to go to hell. I don't see that. If you go back in each of the passages where mark of the beast is found, the ones that go to hell are the ones who take the mark and worship the image. Because everybody's going to be forced to take it. And you can take something under duress, threat, and coercion. Okay? And then follow the money line. To me, the ones that were clearly going to hell according to Revelation are the ones that purposely got their heart into it and worshiped, where they weren't forced to do it. A lot of people, everybody there in Daniel 3 fell down. Three did not, but they can't convince me that everybody worshiped the image. They just went through the motions because they were afraid. Many Muslims, in their heart, don't like the terrorist acts put out by Muslims. Many of them, they don't want to say it, because they're afraid to. They're afraid to say it because of what the imam would say to them. So in their heart, they don't agree with it, but they're afraid to say anything. So here Nebuchadnezzar has deceived himself into thinking all these people are worshiping my image. No, they're afraid they're going to get thrown in the fire. And this is why you can't force people to do things, you know, against their will. People have to accept these things willingly. So he throws out that question. And who is that God, and he, uppercase G, that shall deliver you out of my hands? Now I love their answer. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we are not careful to answer thee in this matter. Now careful, full of care. Our word is worrisome. Okay, they're not full of care. I would have been full of care. My heart would have been beating very quickly. Okay? I would have been sweating already knowing the fire is coming. Okay? Unless the Spirit of God overcomes you and you have this boldness. And only the Spirit of God can do that for us. But notice that they are not careful to answer to thee. If it be so, now notice, they didn't say, it will be so. They said, if it be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace. And he will deliver us out of thine hand, O king. But if not, be it known unto thee, O king, that we will not serve thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou set up. So I've read set up several times, so I know it's more than six. Nine? Okay. Upside down six. Okay, so I like the answer. A lot of times people tend to think if I can muster up the faith, then the answer is going to be given. Yeah, the answer might be no. It just might be. And so they're not positive thinking here. They're just simply saying, and this is the thing you can really admire them for, is that if it be so, God can deliver us, and he's going to deliver us. Be it physically, or we're out of this world. We're still out of your hair. Okay? And if he chooses not to, well, we're just still going to let you know. We're not going to bow down. Now, that's courage. Okay? Thousands of people there. 20,000 or what? How many thousands of people there? And these are the ones that stood up. Amazing thing. Okay, and of course, they are given a one-liner in Hebrews. That's better than nothing. So how's the king respond? Then was Nebuchadnezzar full of fury, and the form of his visage was changed against Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Therefore he spake and commanded that they should heat the furnace 1 7 times more than it was wont to be heated. Oh, nobody understands that, do they? Want? Oh, that's so old English. Nobody understands that old English words. You can see that that means usually. Okay, so heat that thing 7 times. And we can see the number 7 is very uniquely in there. Probably tribulation application. And he commanded the most mighty men that were in his army to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and cast them into the burning fiery furnace. Then these men were bound in their coats, their hosen. Okay, hosen. In our culture, that's hose, ladies' garments. But in the Bible, that's trousers. Okay, and their hats and their other garments and were cast into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Therefore, because the king's commandment was so urgent, that the furnace exceeding hot, the flame of the fire slew those men that were took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So when it slew those men, what happened to Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? They fell into it. And these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell down into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Didn't say anything about bruises. Just they fell in it. I don't know if they landed on their feet, whatever. They got their hands tied, unless the Lord quickly untied them from the flames. And then they caught themselves. I don't know. I have no idea. Okay, the miracle. Then Nebuchadnezzar the king was astonied. Okay, we say astonished. Astonied is a Bible word because it's stoned or petrified. And rose up in haste and spake and said unto the council, did not we cast 3 men bound into the midst of the fire? They answered and said unto the king, true, O king. He answered and said, lo, I see 4 men loose, walking in the midst of the fire, and they have no hurt, and the form of the fourth is like the Son of God. Heathen man knew what the Son of God looked like. How do you know that? This verse is changed in every new Bible. All the new Bibles change it to sons of the gods or something like that. We can see how it is. The Lord Jesus Christ showed up right in the midst of the trial of their life. Okay, and so Daniel 3:25 is a verse you want to try to keep in your memory. The storyline, Nebuchadnezzar recognized the Son of God. He's like the Son of God. Okay, and 4 men loose walking about. Then Nebuchadnezzar came near to the mouth of the burning fiery furnace and spake unto Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, ye servants of the Most High God. Okay, Most High God, all pagans have multiple gods, but they think there's one supreme one, and so he's just discovered who that is. The one that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego serve. You servants of the Most High God, come forth, come hither. Then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came forth out of the midst of the fire, and the princes and the governors, captains, and king counselors, being gathered together, saw these men. Don't you know they looked at them? Upon whose bodies the fire had no power, nor was any hair of their head singed. Neither were their coats changed, nor the smell of fire passed on them. That's another miracle. Ever going to somebody's house smoking cigarettes? Man, you smell like it when you get out. Okay, so all of that's a tremendous miracle. The fire, no hair singed, you know, coats, you know, everything. Probably had to take their coats off. Boy, it's hot in here, fellas. You know, jumping up and down, dancing around, running around, having a good time. Well, this got Nebuchadnezzar's attention. He spake and said, blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Yes, that's right. Who hath sent his angel and delivered his servants that trusted in him and have changed the king's word and yielded their bodies that they might not serve nor worship any god except their own God. So he got several things. They changed the king's word. His decree, they trusted in the Lord, and they yielded their body. That's where we are to yield to the Spirit, where we yield to Him. And a yielding is, you know, it's not where you conjure up the faith. A yielding is you just, you know, it's like you're yielding at a, not a yield sign, a stop sign, where you're actually stopping. A yielding is you're giving away a little bit, so you're yielding a little bit, and then the Spirit takes you the rest of the way. He takes over. So, tremendous thing there. Amazing thing. Now, you see, if God did miracles like that all the time, you know, people say, well, how many people would get right with God if he did these miracles all the time? Why doesn't he do that? It's because that's not the age we're in. Okay, he did that in the Old Testament. Of course, then when you get seeing all these miracles, what do people get doing? They get used to it. I mean, the Jews saw the 10 plagues. They saw the Red Sea crossing. They saw water coming out of the rock, and they're still griping. Okay, and people say, well, if they saw these miracles, then people would get saved. Not according to the story of the rich man Lazarus. Okay, then verse 29. Therefore, I make a decree. So he's going to make a public decree. He's going to make it a law. And of course, when you make these laws, it's a nice way of promoting your own testimony. But you can't force this on people. Okay, in 1983. There's a joint House, Congress, Senate session where they wanted the president to declare 1983 to be the year of the Bible. Okay, and they did this on October 4th, 1982. I can't imagine Ted Kennedy voting for this. Okay, and it's just a one little page document. It's a wonderful little document. I used it in court several times. I bring in front of the judge and I declare, request him to take judicial notice. Then he denies it, and then I just say, God, see, he denied your Bible. Okay, and so that's all I do it for, just to bring the Bible into it. But it's a wonderful little document, one pager. We can print it up and let you see it. I just sent that document on a nice piece of gold paper to our president. Sent him a Bible, included that document, okay, just to let him know we're praying for him. Okay, and so it's a wonderful document. And it's about, and the document reads something like that Andrew Jackson said that this republic rests on the Bible and that the people in the Congress and everybody should take heed to its word. Hey, it's a good document, isn't it? But how many take heed to it? You can't force people to do it. Nebuchadnezzar can't force the people to do it. It's a good gesture what he's doing. It's a very good gesture. Okay, he says this, therefore I make a decree that every people, nation, language which speak of anything amiss against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Now, doesn't the Lord allow people to speak against him all the time? This is the thing about the Muslims. You can't say anything about Muhammad. They get all mad and bent out of shape. And they prove their religion's not peaceful. Okay, sure, if people say something bad about Jesus Christ around me, y'all, I might speak up. I'm not going to fight them about it. I'm not going to get mad at them about them. It's on their head, not mine. You know, I was in a shoe store, and this lady walked by me. She was one of the workers in there. And she said, Jesus Christ. I said, he's a good Savior. She walked by. She goes, yeah, that's right. Yeah. Forgot about that. Okay, but the Lord allows it. Okay, so you can pass all the laws you want. It doesn't matter. And he said, they shall be cut in pieces. And their house shall be made a dunghill, because there is no other God that can deliver after his sword. Well, that's still a religion of tyranny. The Calvinists, pilgrims, and Puritans fled Europe because of the tyranny of the Catholic Church. They came here and set up their own theocracy, and Roger Williams fled from the tyranny of the Calvinists of Massachusetts to start a church in Rhode Island. And Rhode Island established one of the most freest of all the colonies of religious freedom. You know, be it Catholics, be it Calvinists. John Calvin allowed a man to be martyred because he disagreed with him on religious grounds. Do Calvinists know that? Whenever I talk to him, I bring it up. Okay, so you know that's a religion of a tyrant. That's not the God of the Bible. And then verse 30, the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon. So they got a pay grade raise. Okay, we'll stop there. Too long anyway. So any questions?